This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Since August 14th, the United States has evacuated more than 58,000 Americans and Afghan allies from Afghanistan. Several Massachusetts organizations are assisting in resettling Afghan refugees here. Earlier today, we spoke with Syed. He and his wife were resettled through the Special Immigrant Visa Program in May 2019 with help from the International Institute of New England. The Afghan SIV program was created in 2009 to help Afghan allies and their families that are employed by or on behalf of the U.S. government to emigrate to the U.S. Now, Syed and his wife both still have family in Afghanistan. We are not using his last name to keep that family safe. When we talked, we started by asking Syed, given the risks, why he wanted to speak with us and what he wants the world to know.
Thank you for giving me this chance. I would like the world to know what's going on over there, especially for the families of those individuals like me, my wife, who served the United States government in Afghanistan. They are saying like everyone is safe right now at this moment, but I think this is a policy they trying to show a different face at this stage that they're going to make a government in Afghanistan.
So excuse me for interrupting you, but when you say they here, are you referring to the Taliban?
Yes, exactly. So once they have everything, the government is made, so I'm sure they're going to show their real face, and I'm afraid of that.
What are you afraid will happen?
I'm afraid all those things that they did in 25 years ago, they do it again. I believe these are the same Talibans. Maybe they're a little bit educated, but still their beliefs are the same. And I'm afraid of that.
Do you have reason to believe that they'll be able to identify yours and your wife's extended families in Afghanistan?
Yes, I believe in that because before we come here, we got our passport, we become biometrics. So each and every information of us is available right now in Afghanistan, in Kabul. So right now they have access to all those data, my family background, my family list. And they, if they search, they will find out that I am in United States right now. And under my name, there's my family list, their contacts, their information, where they live. So all this information is like easily available to them. And this is a great risk for my family at this moment.
When did you last speak to your family?
I try to have a contact with them on a daily basis because I don't know like if one day I wake up and I try to call them and I hear like they're disappeared or they're not available anymore. But usually 2 days after 2 days or one day, like I find them and talk to them for a few minutes and they say to me, we are safe, we are underground. And then I become a little bit calm.
Are you sleeping at night?
This is a nightmare. Yeah, I sleep, but I have my nightmare. My wife, during the night, different times, many times, she wake up and she cried. And like, I'm okay physically, but mentally we are destroyed. And I can sleep, but I have nightmare in my sleeps, in my dreams.
I'm sorry, Syed. You and your wife have been here since 2019. You came on a special immigrant visa. And that was because of your wife's work with USAID-funded projects. Is that correct?
Yes, right.
What made the two of you decide to leave and apply for this visa?
Even in 2019 or before that, I was not sure that we can have a good future in Afghanistan. And there was always a possibility that this government, this army will collapse one day. And that happens right now.
When you came to Massachusetts, did you have help? And tell us about that first night you spent here in the Commonwealth and away from your home country?
Yeah, the first night I remember, I was in one of my friend's home. I was happy that at least my life, my wife's life is safe. But even from 2019 till now, every day, every moment, whenever I'm going out, whenever I'm at home, whenever I'm visiting a beautiful place, I feel of my family. I wish that they were with me right now. There are some child in my family that they're so cute, and I'm thinking, oh my God, if they were here with us right now, so I had no this tension, this stress which I'm having right now, and the life was much more beautiful.
Do you think you will be able to bring your wife's family and your family to the States? Do you think they'll be able to join you here?
At this moment, I don't know that if we are able to do this or no, but we are trying because their life is at great risk because of us, because of my wife. She was working with the United States, and I hope this will happen very soon. But at this moment, I have no idea what's going to happen. I'm not sure about anything.
And I am sorry to ask you this difficult question, but if they can't join you here, what do you believe their future is in Afghanistan?
As I think, they're going to go back to 25 years ago in 1996 to 2001, where like Taliban ruling Afghanistan. They're going to go back to those dark age. And my sister, she's doing business administration. I guess she's in sixth semester. My brother, he was doing dental art, fourth semester. So even right now, after like 10 days, Taliban ruling Afghanistan, the schools or universities are all closed, and my family, they are underground. And we don't know that if they are again able to go for education or no. This is the main concern. My mother, 25 years ago, she lost the opportunity to get education because of Taliban insurgent at that time, and she couldn't do it. She had only seventh grade, I guess, in school. After that, she left, and she was not able to continue her education. And I'm afraid if the same thing today happened to my sister, which is 21 years old, and I'm afraid of that.
What gives you hope now, Syed?
Yes. Yeah, my main concern is my family members, but it's not like ending to my family. It's about my country. There are lots of girls and boys, child, like my family members, they have no hope at this moment. Sometimes whenever I'm talking about these things, about my family, whenever I'm thinking about their future, that what's going to happen to them, it's really break my heart, and sometimes even I cry. My wife and I, the other weekend, we were out, and we had a coffee with us, and we sat down on a bench in a park, and we were just thinking, and suddenly both of us cried together. And even right now I have that feeling. Maybe you can understand it from my but let's see what will happen. I just can be hopeful for the future, and thank you for giving me the chance to say something about my country, my family today.
That was Syed. We have agreed to withhold his last name for the safety of he and his wife's families in Afghanistan. The two of them came to the United States on a special immigrant visa in May of 2019 after she worked for several years on USAID-funded projects. Syed, thank you. We will be thinking about both of your families.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Let's turn now to Emma Tobin. Emma is the chief program officer for the International Institute of New England, which assisted Syed and his wife coming to the United States on a special immigrant visa. Emma, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you so much.
Let me start by just getting your reactions to what you just heard from Syed, Emma.
Yeah, I mean, I have spent a lot of the last week, and I guess at this point, a week and a half, talking with Syed and with other Afghan community members living in Massachusetts, and gathering information about their extended families that are still in Afghanistan, in order to try to, you know, support those folks to be evacuated and come to the United States. But hearing someone tell their story, for the sake of telling the story and sort of in that emotional way, it hits you differently than when you're, you know, filling out a massive Excel chart and just trying to get all the information. So, I mean, honestly, Syed made me cry when I heard him tell his story again this morning.
I want to ask you, you know, so you've been collecting this information for the last week in this massive spreadsheet you just referred to. You went into that eyes wide open. You've been doing this work. But I imagine there are still things you learned in the last week. What have you learned in the last, say, 7 days talking to families?
Oh, I have learned so much, and I'm still learning so much, because I have been working with refugees and other immigrants and forced migrants for my whole career. But this situation is, every situation is different, but this situation is truly, I think, something unique, and maybe all of us are learning every single moment. So, you know, the U.S. Refugee Admissions Program has some pretty strictly enforced protocols and practices that we follow, and we are very much outside of those right now, in kind of an uncharted territory.
So I want to ask you to help people picture what the experience for somebody coming to the States as a refugee, that first 48 hours getting support from an institution like yours, what that looks like. Start with, you know, they get to the airport.
Sure. So even before a person arrives at the airport, the International Institute of New England will receive a travel notification that a refugee individual or family is coming. And we often have a week or 2 or 3 weeks at the most to prepare for that family to arrive. And so that sort of starts a flurry of activity where we're looking for an appropriate apartment for that family. We're getting it furnished and set up and ready. And by the time the family arrives, which is usually, you know, after midnight at Logan Airport, we're there to pick them up. And we bring them to that apartment. We have a warm meal ready for them. The federal government requires that it be a culturally appropriate meal. And of course, we want to do our best to do that. And we show people how to use the appliances in their new home, to how to use the heat if they've never had to use heat before, and basically how to spend their first night safely in this apartment. The next day we come back, and that starts this intensive 90-day period of what is the refugee resettlement program.
And what is invisible to people that people should know about the trauma and the experience of families coming to the U.S. as refugees, frankly, coming to the Commonwealth as refugees?
I think that everyone should understand, first and foremost, and I hope that this would be obvious, but I'll say it, that refugees are people, and their experiences and their lives are as diverse as any group of people that you will meet. But I do think that there's a commonality, and that commonality is just incredible resilience and persistence. Because even to arrive at the point where you're, you know, landing at Logan Airport after midnight as a refugee, you have already been through so much, and you've navigated so many things. And I watch our clients continue to navigate so many things, people learning to read and write in any language for the first time in their lives at 55 years old, you know, kids going to school where they're learning in their fifth language, people arriving as refugees during a pandemic where they have to immediately quarantine, just so many things that people manage to make their way through and to live really meaningful lives in Massachusetts.
How many refugees from Afghanistan have you settled, say, in the last few weeks, and how many do you anticipate as a result of this evacuation?
The numbers from the last few weeks are low. We have received Afghans in our offices whose status is frankly unclear. They're arriving with paperwork that we've never seen before, and we're still trying to piece together what their immigration status is and which services we're meant to provide to them. So the numbers are fairly low from the last few weeks. We've resettled over 330 Afghan people in New England since 2014, and we are preparing to receive at least that many evacuees within the state, not all through our agency, but you know, within the state, there are other resettlement providers as well, and to be providing them with essentially emergency resettlement services, since we are in such an unprecedented moment here.
So to that point, so the Trump administration reduced the number of refugees the U.S. would support bringing to the country. Over the course of that presidency, he cut the number from 85,000 to 18,000. And then, of course, even fewer people came because of the pandemic. And that meant organizations cut staff because staff are at least partially paid by resettlement contracts. So now we have this influx. How much staff did you guys cut back during those lean years? And how hard is it to scale up quickly enough now?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it's a situation that many refugee resettlement agencies are probably really struggling with in this moment. I think we are lucky in that we were able to be nimble during the Trump years and the pandemic and sort of pivot and provide services to other immigrants of different immigration statuses and to secure other types of public and private funding to support that work. So while our teams are smaller than they were, pre-Trump presidency, they're not that small. And actually in this moment, we're actively recruiting two case managers to join our team who speak Dari and Pashto so that we will be prepared to receive the Afghans who are arriving in Massachusetts.
And in a sentence, Emma, how can listeners who want to help right now?
We need financial support to do this work. We have been told that there will be federal funding on the way, but that we need to be ready to bring in private resources as well in order to resettle these people in large numbers very rapidly. And we need that support.
All right. That was Emma Tobin, the Chief Program Officer for the International Institute of New England. Emma, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.